And we're holding on Memphis Amud Bey's, the fifth line of the wide lines. And we started talking yesterday about the story of Yoav. We got into that because the Mishnah, or not the Mishnah, Braisa had talked about that when a person is executed by a Jewish king as murdered by Malchus, then his property is forfeit to the government, as opposed to people who are executed by Beis Din, which has been the subject of this parak, their nechassim go to their yoshim. And the last thing we talked about was we find that Yoav had run to the Mishkan and held on to the corners of the Mizbeach. So we said that if we sit now, and we had the opinion, we had a machlokas, the Chacham of Rabbi, and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, the nechassim of people who were executed by the king also go to their families. So the question was, according to the Chachamim, we understand he didn't want to be executed by the king, therefore he's holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach to try to save himself. At worst, he'll be judged by the Sanhedrin, as Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, that holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach represents that he's going to have himself judged by the Sanhedrin. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's the difference? Either way, he's going to be killed, and either way, Nechassim are going to his Yoshim. And we said that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say that he wanted Chaye Shah. He wanted to at least live for a little longer while Bnei Yahu confers with Shlomo about what to do. So to understand this next Amud from here until the end of the parak, we need to review a little bit various stories involving Yoav and other people that he interacted with. These are various episodes throughout Sefer Shmuel and the beginning of Malachim. So it's like this. There was Yoav, who was a nephew of David, and he was David's general. Then there was Avner, who was a relative of Shaul's, and he was Shaul's general. So you have there were interactions between Avner and David in Shmuel Aleph when David is on the run from Shaul. We'll talk about those later. In any case, eventually David becomes king over Shevet Yehuda. Avner takes Ishbosheth, one surviving son of Shaul, and makes him king over the other Shvatim. At one point, this is in Shmuel Beis. At one point, there's a battle between David's and Ishbosheth's forces. So Avner is on Shaul's side. On David's side, you have besides Yoav has two brothers named Asahel and Avishai. So now, during this battle, Asahel, who was an extremely fast runner, is chasing after Avner, apparently with intent to kill him. So Avner warns Asahel several times, back off, otherwise I'm going to have to kill you in self-defense, you're a roidif. Asahel doesn't listen. Eventually, Avner hits him with the back of his sword, with the hilt of his sword, and kills him. So Avner would take the view that he did it in self-defense. Yoav would take the view that it was unjustified, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. Later on, Avner and Ishbosheth have a falling out. Avner decides, you know what, forget about Ishbosheth, I'm going over to David's side. He comes to David and Hebron to tell him, I'm going to now be on your side and I'm going to help all the other Shvatim, I'm going to convince all the other Shvatim to accept your kingship. Yoav hears that Avner is in town. He has it against him again that he had killed his brother Asahel. There were other considerations as well. To make a long story short, he killed Avner. As we learned back in the second parak of our Masechta on Daf Chof, David was extremely upset about it. He's concerned people are going to think that now he's gunning for everybody who was on Shaul's side. That's going to prevent the reconciliation of all the Shvatim. Avner himself was a tzaddik, etc. So we learned before that David broke protocol by going to the Levaya, even though normally a king doesn't, and he's doing his best to convince everybody that he had nothing to do with it. Now, he can't actually punish Yoav.
Who killed Avner?
I'm saying Yoav did. Yoav, Asahel's brother, killed Avner, saying that he deserved it for having killed Asahel, Yoav's brother. So now, again, David is extremely upset about it. He can't really do anything to Yoav. He says, actually, in the psukim over there, that Yoav is really too powerful for him. He's only just establishing himself as a king now. Yoav is the general. The whole Jewish people depend on him. So David says, I really don't have the ability to punish Yoav with what he deserves, but he curses Yoav with a bunch of curses, which we're going to discuss now in the Gemara. Okay. Years pass, David is now king over all the Shvatim, 30 or so years pass, then comes Avshalom's revolt. Avshalom needs a general. He takes there's Amasa. Amasa is another nephew of David, which makes him a cousin of Yoav, and he becomes and he's also a cousin of Avshalom. So Avshalom makes Amasa his general. Avshalom's revolt fails. Avshalom himself is killed, and that was actually against David's wishes, because David specifically gave Yoav instructions before that final battle to make sure to not harm Avshalom. Yoav didn't listen, and he killed Avshalom. So after everything's over, then David decides, you know what, I don't want Yoav as my general anymore. He's been too disobedient. Besides which, anyway, I want to reconcile with the other Shvatim. So he offers Amasa the job of chief general of the United Jewish Army. Shortly after that, another revolt breaks out. A fellow named Sheva ben Bichri announces, "Ein lanu chelek b'David, let's go revolt, we don't need David." So David tells Amasa, "You're the new general, go gather together the army and go catch this Sheva ben Bichri." Amasa was late getting back with the soldiers, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So David says to Yoav, you know what, listen, we got to get things taken care of as fast as possible. You go gather together the army and go chase after this Sheva ben Bichri. On the way, Yoav's with the army. He meets up with Amasa and tricks Amasa into thinking that he's buddy-buddy with him, gets him in within range and kills him. So Yoav remains the general of the army because at this point Amasa's dead. Now we have, then we come to the beginning of, so this is all various incidents throughout Sefer Shmuel. Now we come to Sefer Melachim. David is old and weak, and Adoniyahu, a son of David, thinks that he has a chance at the throne. He gathers together a bunch of supporters, one of them being Yoav, and tries to seize the crown for himself. Bathsheba and Nathan find out what's happening. We have this as Aftarah of Parshas Chayesara. They go and tell David. David says, absolutely not. Shlomo has been promised the kingship. And he goes and immediately gives orders that Shlomo should be anointed as a new king.
Do we have a Shritis in Gemara, or was it Himichamara that you had a few weeks ago?
A few weeks ago we mentioned about in our Gemara about Avner. This part about Adoniyahu, no, we had earlier in our Masechta, we had about Adoniyahu, we had when David was old and weak, and therefore they needed Avishag HaShunamis to warm him up, and Adoniyahu figured he has a chance. Yeah, we discussed it back on Daf Chav Beis in our Masechta. Anyway, Adoniyahu's attempt fails, and Shlomo becomes the king. Before David passes away, he gives Shlomo instructions. It's an Aftarah of Vayechi. He tells him there's unfinished business. One piece of unfinished business is that Yoav has to be dealt with. I wasn't able to punish him during my lifetime, but you need to deal with it. You need to punish him so he doesn't end up having to go to Gehenna. So then you finally have the part that we started learning yesterday, that Yoav runs to the Mizbeach and grabs a hold of the horns of it, and when Shlomo sends Benayahu ben Yehoyada to execute him, then Yoav says, then he tells him, come out of there. Yoav says, no, I'm not coming out of there. I'll die where I am. So now that we have that background, let's go and learn the Gemara and see some deeper aspects of some of these stories. So like this, the pasuk says, when Benayahu comes to Yoav, who's holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach, and he says to Yoav, come on out of there, and Yoav says, no, I'm not coming out, kipoy almost, I'll just die over here. So the pasuk says, Vayoshev Benayahu as a melech dover lemer, Benayahu responded back, went and reported back to the king, and he says, lemer, he says, koy dibur Yoav v'choy anani. This is what Yoav said, and this is what he answered me. So that implies that there's more than just what it says in the pasuk. To just say that Yoav said, I'm not coming out, I'm staying here, he doesn't have to report back to the king in the first place. In any case, where this koy dibur Yoav v'choy anani suggests that there was a whole back and forth over there. So what happened was, Yoav tells Benayahu, Zil Emalei, listen, go tell Shlomo, Tauti le tavid b'hai gavra. You can't do two things to that person, meaning to me. E kafla slay. So you have like this. I'm under a bunch of curses that your father David put on me after I killed Avner, says Yoav. So if Shlomo wants to kill me, if he wants to kill me, then he should take on himself the curses that you're for that his the, so he's telling Shlomo through Benayahu, if you want to kill me, then you should take on yourself the curses that your father put on me. Meaning, in other words, basically, Maharsha explains, he's saying both things are unjust. David shouldn't have cursed me in the first place because I had a valid reason to kill Avner, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. And now he's doing something else unjust by wanting to kill me now for that and for Amasa, which also I had justifications for that. So now if he wants to do that, then at least he has to take the curses on himself. Then find the Eloi. If not, Shavke the Leiku Balatuse the Latiyavuch. If not, then leave me alone. It's enough that I'm going to have the curses that your father, that David, put on me. So that was the Koy Diver Yoav Choyanoni. So now Benayahu is not sure what to do. Yoav has a valid point. He shouldn't have the. There's no double jeopardy over here. So the pasuk continues. Vayomer lo hamelach. So Shlomo says to Benayahu, "Asei kasha diber. Sure, do what he said. Ufgaboy and strike him. Ukvartoy, and then you'll bury him." In other words, Shlomo is saying, "Fine, I'm willing to accept the flawless on myself. I can take care of my father's last wishes to deal with Yoav and not allow a peaceful death." So in other words, the simple meaning is that David is saying, "I don't care if you have to kill him in the Azara, in the Mishkan, then you do that." But now the Gemara is doubtioning that it means that David is saying, in addition, that he's saying that fine, if that's what it takes, that I have to take on the Klolus in order to be able to do that, then fine, I'm willing to do that. So the Gemara points out, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav. Whole clawless Shekilo David as Yoav. Sure enough, all the curses that David put on Yoav from killing Avner, all of them, the Skaimo Bazar Shel David, indeed, since Shlomo took them on himself, all of them ended up coming true with one or another of David's and Shlomo's descendants. Namely, like this, Yoav, David had cursed Yoav, Al Yikoris Mibes Yoav, he said there should never cease from the house of Yoav, Zov. We know what those are. Machzik bapelach. A pelach is a spindle, is a large stick that's used for spinning. So people would sometimes use it as a makeshift crutch. So David is saying that one of the five curses is that Yoav's descendants will have to use crutches that they won't be able to walk properly. Another point, a pelech is usually used for spinning by women, and we'll talk about that soon, that's the Shem as well, another possible meaning in that. The noifel bacherev, and falling by the sword, v'chasarlech, and I'm lacking bread. So those are the five curses that David put on Yoav, and now we're saying, because Shlomo accepted them on himself as the price for having Yoav executed, then therefore Shlomo, David and Shlomo's descendants, different ones, suffered from all five of these things. Zov Merechavam. Where do we see there was a Zov? Is Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. Dichtiv, the pasuk describes how most of the Shvatim revolt against Rechavam, and they took Yerovam as their king. So the pasuk describes Vamelech Rechavam his amitz lalas bamerkava. The king Rechavam was trying very hard to get up onto his chariot, lonus Yerushalayim, to flee to Yerushalayim. It was in Shechem that there was the showdown between him and the other Shvatim, where everybody asked him, "Please go easy on us on taxes and the forced labor and all," compared to what Shlomo did, and Rechavam says, "No, I'm going to be even stronger and harsher on you than Shlomo was." So most of the Shvatim say, "Who needs this Rechavam?" And they revolted and made Yerovam their king instead. So Rechavam realizes he's in danger. He's in hostile territory. So the pasuk says he was trying very hard to get up on his chariot to run back to Yerushalayim. And why, with the point that it mentions Merkava, we have Xera Shava, the Uchtiv Bachala Merkava Shiyukov Olav Azov Yitma, the Pasuk mentions any riding equipment on which a Zov rides, such as a saddle, becomes Tomei from a Zov, Tumas Nidras. So we see from that comparison, since the Pasuk makes a point that Rechavam was getting up on his Merkava, means that he was a Zov. Next, Metzora. Where do we find there was a Metzora in David's descendants? The Uzziyahu. We have the story of Uzziyahu a couple hundred years later, one of the middle kings of Yehuda. Dichtiv, the Pasuk describes Uchreskosai, when he became very strong in his kingship, Gobath Liboy Ablahashchis, his heart became proud to a destructive degree. He thought of himself as great enough to be a Koyan as well as a king. By Yimal Bashem Alekov, so he betrayed Hashem by disobeying Hashem and going into the Heichel. By Yovel Heichel Hashem Lahakti Amizbah HaKtodas, he went into the Heichel to bring Ktodas, where he can't. He's a Zor, he's not a Koyan. Uchtiv, and the Pasuk says, Vatsoras, Zorcha Bemitzchoy, Soras shone forth on his forehead. Now, obviously, he's getting Soras because of what he himself did wrong. Other than that, up until that point, he had been a good king, he had been a tzaddik, but he made this terrible mistake. But nevertheless, the point is, if it hadn't been for David's curse, which now bounced back onto the family, then the Eibishter might have been more patient with him. He might have made that he doesn't get Saras as soon. He might have gotten some lesser punishment. And the fact also, the Oruch HaNer also adds, the fact that it says, V'hatzoras, implies, it could have said V'tzoras, V'hatzoras, implies, you mean V'tzoras, which we know of from before, that came on him. So in other words, it was because of his Aveira, but after all, it might not have happened so fast and so seriously had it not been for the fact that Shlomo took these curses on the family, and that's also why the Pasuk is stressing V'hatzoras, implying that's a Saras we know already from before. Okay, so that was the Tzaras. Masik Bapelach, where do we see that a person was holding on to a staff, meaning that he couldn't walk properly? Me'osa. That we have the story of Osa, who was the third king after the kingdom split up, so he's the great grandson of Shlomo. Dichtiv, the Pasuk describes, he was also a king who was basically a tzaddik. Rakla is diknose cholos raglav. When he got old, he had a disease in his feet. And what kind of disease? He was struck by podagra. In English, it's called gout, which is a disease that makes it very painful. It's tremendous foot pain, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, and it makes it that he can't walk properly. So therefore, he'd have to be holding on to a pelech, to some kind of staff like that, in order to be able to walk properly. So the Gemara interjects, by the way, what is podagra? What exactly is this disease of podagra? He says, it feels like a needle in living flesh. That's the kind of pain it is, a stabbing pain. So the Gemara no yoda. How did Rav Nachman know that? And the answer is, one possibility is that Rav Nachman himself suffered from this disease, so he could describe it firsthand. The boy same with Rabbah have a gomerle. Another possibility he learned from his Rebbe that's what it feels like. The boy same with Soda Hashem Lireyav. Another possibility is the Gemara uses this answer. Sometimes Hashem gives his secrets to those who fear him. In other words, people, great Talmud Chachamim who fear Hashem and work to learn Torah as much as possible, then Hashem tells them things that they otherwise couldn't have known, such as in this case, what podagra feels like. Rabbeinu Hanano, by the way, brings a different explanation of Mach. So there's the Machzik Bapelach, was also that he couldn't walk properly because of his foot disease. Rabbeinu Hanano brings a different explanation from the Yerushalmi. The word Pelach, again, it means a stick that's used for spinning thread, and it's something that typically women do. So instead, the Yerushalmi refers to that the Machzik Bapelach among David's descendants was Yoyosh. Yoyosh was one of the kings of Yehuda. Famously, he's the one who the whole family was almost wiped out. He was the only baby that was saved. Anyway, to make a long story short, for a period of time during his rule, he was good. Yoyada Akkoyin was teaching him, and he was good. After Yoyada passed away, Yoyosh became a Rosha and an Oyvid Avodah Zarah. He even allowed the nobles of Yehuda to worship him as an Avodah Zarah. So then the Pasuk describes that an army unit from Aram came and invaded Eretz Yisrael, and the Pasuk says they tortured Yoyosh horribly, and the Yerushalmi says part of the torture was that they used him like men use women. So in that sense, the Masik Lapelach is him, that he was abused in that way, like a woman. Anyway, so that's another meaning of Masik Lapelach. Next, Hashem's secret is to those who fear him, and he informs them of his covenant. So here, Hashem, so one possibility is that Rav Nachman knew what podagra feels like, what gout feels like, because Hashem revealed the secret to him. Next, the fourth one, Nofel Bacherev, where do we see that one of David's descendants fell and was killed by the sword, is Yoshiyahu. We see from Yoshiyahu, one of the last kings of Yehuda, Dichtiv Vayoru Hamorim, or Hayorim really, the Pasuk says, Lamelech Yoshiyahu. The Pasuk says that Yoshiyahu and his army went to fight against Pare Nechoi, and Pare's archers shot at Yoshiyahu, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Avsha, also called Gufei Kikvara. They made his whole body like a sieve. They stabbed him so many times that he was full of holes all over his body. So we see, in other words, now Maharsha says he wasn't the only king of Yehuda who was killed, but he's the only one where we can see, based on the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, that specifically a sword was used to kill him. So in other words, first the archers shot him, but then they followed it up. They came, the Egyptian soldiers came over and were stabbing him with their swords. And the fifth one, Bachasau Lechem, where do we see that the curse of lacking bread came true among David's descendants? We have that Mirchonia. We have from Yechoniah, who was the next to last king of Yehuda. He was taken prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar, and he was put in jail for many years in Babel. And the Pasuk says, Dichtiv Aruchos, Aruchos Tamid, Nitnoloi. The Pasuk says that he was given a daily meal by Evel Meroidach. Evel Meroidach was Nebuchadnezzar's son and successor. So after Nebuchadnezzar died, after Yechoniah by that point had been in jail for 37 years, then Evel Meroidach freed him from jail and honored him. And the Pasuk says that he gave him, that Yechoniah from then on was given a daily meal. Now Rashi says that it was actually given by Nebuchadnezzar. Now if you look in the Psukim, you find over there that it was actually mentions that Evel Meroidach gave it to him. So there are actually different explanations. One possibility is that the Girsa in Rashi is incorrect, and instead of Nebuchadnezzar, it should say Evel Meroidach. And in fact, so there's a marginal note over here where that says that that's how it should be, and the Yad Ramah also says it. On the other hand, Maharsha says that no, what it means is that we see from the Pasuk that in Evel Meroidach's times he was being given food every day, implying that in Nebuchadnezzar's times, sometimes he was going hungry there in jail. Another possible explanation is that yes, he was getting from Nebuchadnezzar and from Evel Meroidach, and Evel Meroidach, though, what he did was he did something special. He had Yechoniah dine with him at his table. But already he was getting from Nebuchadnezzar, but the point is, he didn't have his own. He had to be supplied with his food by somebody else, so that shows that he was chasar lochem, that he was lacking bread. So in short, all five of the curses that David had said on Yoav, again, because Shlomo was ready to accept them on himself as the price in order to kill Yoav, then therefore all of them came out on David's descendants. Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, so Hainu da Amri Inchi, this is like the expression people say, Tehe Luta V'loi Tehe Lota. Better you should be one of the ones who's cursed rather than the one who curses. Because you see over here that David cursed Yoav, and eventually it wound up bouncing back on his descendants. In fact, Iyun Yaakov, on Ein Yaakov, points out, when you think about it, When you think about it, it was a little bit unjust for David to put these curses on Yoav. The very fact, we see that Shlomo was willing to accept them. Why didn't Shlomo say, you know what, there's no business, these curses, we should just be mevatel them altogether? So it shows that, in other words, there was a certain degree to which David and his descendants are guilty, and therefore by David putting this curse on Yoav, it ended up coming back on him and his descendants, and therefore, so we learn a lesson from that in the future, don't be so quick to curse others.
Why does he have to accept? He just said, king should kill him. Who's asking him for what?
Well, that's the thing. We were saying before that Yoav had a valid point. He says, listen, your father already punished me for this killing of Avner by cursing me with these five curses. Now you want to also execute me. This is like double jeopardy. It's two punishments for the same thing. So he tells Benayahu to tell Shlomo, if you want to fulfill your father's instructions and kill me, then you have to accept these curses on yourself. And Shlomo agreed. If that's the price we have to pay in order to fulfill David's last wishes, then that's what we're going to do.
If the king David says do something, you do it without any yes and buts, and that's it.
Okay, nonetheless, Yoav had a valid point, and you see that Benayahu took it seriously enough to go and consult with Shlomo about it. There is actually, and there's an expression in a pasuk that says,
the fact that he went to consult with Shlomo, he was murdered by Malchus.
Who's murdered by Malchus? Benayahu? Benayahu is given instructions, but it doesn't
mean... Yoav.
Yoav, well, that's what we're going to talk about in the whole sugya over here, what exactly Yoav was guilty of. Yeah, in the final analysis, he was a Murid B'Malchus, but the question was, is he being judged and executed for that, or for the fact that he killed Avner and Amasa all those years before, which is not necessarily Murid B'Malchus, that's a different factor. Yeah, I was going to say, there's a Loshen HaPosuk that says, King Kilas Chinam Loi Savoy, a Posuk in Mishlei that Shlomo himself wrote, that says that a vain klala loy sovay, and there's a kriyuksiv over there where it's written loy and put loy with an aleph and pronounced loy with a vav. So one meaning of it is that a curse for nothing will come to him, meaning ends up bouncing back on the person who did it. So in effect, that's what happened over here. Yoav is arguing, and there is some justification for that, that David had no business cursing him with these five curses, and now therefore he's saying that they wound up bouncing back on Shlomo. All right, so let's continue. So the Gemara says, Asiyul Yoav. So now they brought Yoav to, to Beis Din. So we said before that he was holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach, meaning, in other words, as Tosfos had brought, as we learned yesterday, that it means that he wanted to be judged by Beis Din rather than by David, rather than by Shlomo. And again, according to the Chachamim, the benefit of that would be that then at least his property will go to his Yoshim rather than being confiscated by the government. And according to the Yehuda, that'll give him a little extra time. Anyway, so they brought him to Beis Din. They brought him to Beis Din for judgment. Omalei, so they tell him, "My time, Ktaltil Avner. Why'd you kill Avner?" Omalei, so Yoav answers, we have over here Lei and whatever. It goes to Bach changes it to Lahu because really we're speaking to the whole Sanhedrin. Anyway, so Yoav answers, "Goyal Adam, Asol Havoy." What do you mean? I was Asol's Goyal Adam. Avner had killed Asol, as we talked about before. So Asol was my brother, so I'm his Goyal Adam. So they answered him, "Asol Roydif Havoy." What do you mean? Asol was a Roydif who was chasing after Avner with intent to kill him. Omalei, so Yoav says, "Okay, but Hoyal Lachsilo Be'echad Meivorov." Fine. But the fact is, with a roidif, you don't have blanket permission to kill him, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta in detail. With a roidif, the first thing you have to do is try to save him from doing the Avera by wounding him in one of his limbs. So Avner should have done that. It's true he's warning Asael back off, but then when Asael didn't back off, instead of outright killing him, Avner should have tried to disable him. Amalei, so the Rosh Beis Din says to Yoav, Lo Yochela, he wasn't able to. It wasn't a situation. As we're going to learn later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Dinim of Roidif in detail at the end of the seventh parak. So we're going to say over there, if you're able to save the Roidif by disabling him in one of his Avorim, then you have to do that. If not, if the situation is such that you can't, then you're allowed to kill him. So the Rosh Beis Din is saying to Yoav, this was the situation. Avner wasn't able to do anything. Omalei, Yoav says, Hash to be doifen chamishis kibinlei. Look at this. He was able to hit him so precisely in his fifth rib. And what's so dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Vayakeu Avner ba'achrei achanis elachomesh. Avner struck him with the back, with the hilt of his sword, at the Choymesh. And what is the Choymesh? The Amr of Yechanan, B'doifen Chamishes, it means the fifth rib, the Mokum Shemar of a covered Tluyen Boy, the place where the gallbladder and the liver are hanging. So in other words, it's a very sensitive spot, and a blow over there can kill a person. So Yoav says, look how exactly he hit him in that one vulnerable spot. You're telling me that Avner wouldn't have been able to kill my brother, wouldn't have been able to wound my brother Asoil in some other part of the body? So yes, he killed him unjustly, and therefore I'm the Goyal Adam. Fine. The Rosh Beis Din says, fine. Nazel Avner, fine. Let's let go of the story of Avner. Fine. You have a valid argument to say that you killed him as the Goyal Adam. To be sure, Maharsha points out, the Pasuk does mention, when David is giving his instructions to Shlomo, and when Shlomo says afterwards, when Benayahu tells him what Yoav has said, both times they mention the fact that he killed Avner and Amasa. So in other words, so they're not accepting the argument of the Beis Din, but fine, that's David and Shlomo hold, the Rosh Beis Din may accept this argument from Yoav, but nevertheless, David and Shlomo are not obligated to accept that, and they can still say that he's guilty of killing him. Another point Maharsha says is they may even hold la halacha, that even if he's able to, that, that,
there is in fact an opinion that even where he's able to save himself by wounding the person, he is allowed to kill him. So David and Shlomo may have held like that. So therefore Avner would have had every right, according to that, to kill Asael, and therefore that Yoav is guilty of killing Avner for no purpose. In any case, the Beis Din is saying, fine, we'll let go of the claim about Avner. Let's go to the next charge. My time k'talti la'amosa. Why'd you kill Amosa? Omalei, so Yoav says, Amosa mod b'malchus hava. Amosa had disobeyed the king, so he's chayiv misa. Dichtiv, as we talked about before, in connection with the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, by Yoav ha'malach la'amosa hazak li'es ishuhud ha'shloshes yomim, v'goymer, the king says to Amosa, who again had just been appointed the new general, he says, gather together for me quickly the men of Yehuda and be here in 3 days. Vayelach Amosa lahazikas Yehuda. He went to summon together all the soldiers from Yehuda. Vayocher, but he was late getting back. He didn't make it back after the 3 days. Well, that makes him a murder b'malchus. Omalei, but the Rosh Beis Din says to Yoav, Amosa achen v'rakin darash. You have to realize, Amosa wasn't just delayed because he got busy with something else. He did it correctly in that case because he was darshaning where it says ach and rak in the Torah. Ach and rak are miyotim. Whenever we have the word ach or the word rak, it means that we're excluding something from a general rule. Namely, the Beis Din tells Yoav, Ashkechinu, when Amosa went to gather together the soldiers, he found them to pasiach lahuba masechta, that they had just started learning a masechta of Gemara. Obviously, we don't mean the actual Gemara as we have it. This is long before even Mishnayos. This is 1,000 years before even Mishnayos were composed. What we mean, in other words, they were learning a topic in Torah. Omar, so Amosa thinks to himself like this. Where do we know that a murder b'malchus is chayiv misa? Steve, the Pasuk says that by Yoshua, kol isha sheyamre espicha, anybody who disobeys you, v'lo yishma esvarecha, and who doesn't pay attention to your words, l'chol asher tetzavenu, anything that you command him, yumas, will be put to death. And a braisa says on that, yochol afilu l'divrei Torah, you would think that means that even if the king tells you to violate something in Torah, then you have to listen to him. Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk continues, rak chazak ve'emats, only be strong and courageous. So the rak is a mute. If the king is telling you to violate something of Torah, then you don't listen to him. So in this case over here, in this case, they're starting to learn Torah. So therefore, we can't interrupt their learning, even for this important purpose of putting down Sheva ben Bichri's revolt. So the Beis Din argues and says that Amosa had a valid reason to delay in coming with the soldiers because otherwise it would have been violating the Torah to go and interrupt them in the middle of their learning. So they tell him, so Amosa was correct in what he did, and you were wrong to kill him and considering him a murdered b'malchus. Tosfos actually points out there was no hasra over there, so how are they bringing him up on charges of killing Amosa anyhow? But Tosfos answers that the Beis Din is going to go on to tell Yoav that on the contrary, you're a murdered b'malchus, so therefore don't be accusing Amosa of that and saying that you can, and saying that you could have killed him because he was a murdered b'malchus. On the contrary, he acted correctly, and you were the one who was wrong about it. Bichlal, though, over here, when we're saying that, the Beis Din is first trying to try him on charges of murder, and then when they can't, then they're going to tell him that he's a murdered b'malchus. So an interesting point is, again, why Yoav, we understand why he wanted to be judged by the Beis Din, we said before, because of estate planning. Why did Shlomo go through this whole thing? Why was Shlomo willing to go through this whole thing? So the Margolius Hayam over here explains a very interesting thing. Bichlal, when we said before, we started the whole story by saying that Yoav at the end ran to the Mizbeach and was holding on to the corners. But the Rambam learns like this. When we say that the Mizbeach can save a person, not when he has to be judged by Beis Din. The only way the Mizbeach saves a person is if he's a Kohen who's going to be doing the Avodah. Then temporarily, until he's finished the Avodah, then they can't take him off the Mizbeach. But the Rambam continues, when it comes to the king, when it comes to Din Malchus, or based in executing a person based on Haras Shah, then yes, the Mizbeach will protect him for the time being, even if he's not a Kohen. So now, so the Margolius Hayyam brings Shuvas Ben Yehuda. He says, this is what's going on over here. He wanted the Beis Din to judge him, to say that he's guilty for killing Avner or Amasa, and that way, that will be a reason. Then, in that case, he's being judged by Beis Din. Then the exemption of that he's holding on to the Mizbeach won't work, so that way he'll be able to be removed from the Mizbeach. And now, once they removed him, and they're judging him on these cases, so in the end, they found, we said, he's not guilty as far as Avner, but they're saying, there is reason to say that he was guilty as far as Amasa. But in any case, the point is though that fine, they may say he's at least guilty of killing B'shogeg, and now he has to go to the Ore Mikla. So now Yoav realizes he's stuck. Now Yoav is stuck. If he returns to the Mizbeach, then Shlomo is not going to be able to be killed as a murdered B'malchus, because fine, the Mizbeach can protect him from that, but still a Goyal Adam could get him, and Shlomo is a Goyal Adam. He's Amasa's cousin. So if he says we should be brought to the Ir Mikla, then Shlomo could kill him over there as a Murid B'malchus. So Yoav decides that he's better off staying at the Mizbeach. And then again, as we said before, that it's fine at this point. If you want to kill me, then Yoav says only if you accept the curses on yourself. So there was all kinds of maneuvering over here. We're saying, but that's the reason why you had this court case in the first place. Why didn't Shlomo just outright send Benayahu to kill him? Is because of all these considerations. Because as long as one point is, again, because as long as he's holding on to the Mizbeach, then the king can't judge him as a Murid B'malchus. Okay. So the Gemara continues. And so the Sanhedrin tells Yoav, Ela Avu Gavra Murid B'Malchus Avra. You're accusing Amasa of having been a Murid B'Malchus. On the contrary, you're a Murid B'Malchus. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Vashmur Bar Ad Yoav. Yoav heard about what was going on, how Shlomo had been appointed as king, and how just before that it describes how Adoni Yohu had been executed for. We looked back on Daf Chof Beis that Adoni Yohu had designs on the kingship still, and he was asking for Avishag as a wife, which is a Ridu Malchus, because she was David's exclusive possession, and Shlomo could marry her if he wanted, but Adoni Yohu, as a commoner, could not. So now, and the Poskins, Vashmur Bar Yoav, Yoav heard about what's going on, that Adoni Yohu had been killed. Ki Yoav not Achre Adoniya, and Yoav had inclined after Adoniya, he was one of his supporters, the Achre Avshalom Loi Nota, but he hadn't, back when Avshalom, a few years earlier, had rebelled against David, then Yoav had not followed Avshalom. So in other words, the point is that so now Yoav was a Murid B'Malchus. He had followed Adoni Yohu and tried to make him king, which is a Murid B'Malchus against Shlomo. So the Sanhedrin says to Yoav, ultimately that even if we're going to say that you're Potter because of Avner, and even if we're going to say that you can find an excuse about Avner and about Amasa, nevertheless the fact is that you were a Murid B'Malchus, and for that reason alone, you need to be executed. So the Gemara says, by the way, my loynota, why does the Pasuk have to mention that he didn't follow Avshalom? That's not a reason why he's Murid B'Malchus. On the contrary, that means that then he was loyal to David. So the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda shebikish lintes v'loynota. It means that even Avshalom, Yoav was considering following him, but in the end he didn't. So the Pasuk is saying, when it came to Avshalom, Yoav was thinking of following him, but he didn't. But now when it came to Adoni Yohu, then Yoav actually followed him and supported him. The Gemara says, my time aloy nota, taka, why didn't he follow Avshalom? And the answer is, Amar Rav Elazar, dain lichluchis shel David kayemes. Because David's strength was still there. Lichluchis literally means moisture. In other words, David still had a fair amount of his strength at the time. We actually see from the psukim in the story of Avshalom that David was still quite powerful then physically, and therefore so Yoav was afraid to start up with him. But when it comes to Adoni Yohu, already Yoav figured David is weak and he's lying in bed and he can't even get warm. So then he figures he has his opportunity. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says another reason why Yoav didn't try to support Avshalom. Adayin it's tagnini shel David kayomin. David's powerful people who are helping him out are still present. Apparently they weren't by the time of Adoni Yohu a few years later, but in the times of Avshalom there were. Now Rashi points out the word it's tagninus literally means tagnine, whatever literally means stargazers. So here we're not talking about stargazers, but what we mean is people when they hear a prediction from a stargazer, they tend to follow it pretty loyally, because they know that it's more likely to be true. So the same way, these were people that Duggan would fight his battles using their advice and using their tactics and all. What do we mean? Yomer of Yehuda Amar Rab, as we learned this over the year in the Masechta. Rabbi Yehuda had said in the name of Rab, Arba Meis Yelodim Hoyula the David. David had 400 young men in his army. That Kulan Vene Yefas Toya Hoyu. All of them were children of Yefas Toya that had been captured in various previous battles. Umagadle Bloyus Hoyu. They were wearing their hair long in a chuk, like Goyish style, so that way the Goyim will be afraid of them. At one point, the Goyim will see to themselves, look at this. These boys were born from Yefas Toya, who were captured from various previous nations that David had defeated in battle and captured their women. That itself would psychologically have an effect on them and make them, well, why should we dare fight against David? We're going to end up in the same situation. They would go at the head of the army, the Hain Bale group in Shal David. They're the mighty men of David's army. So they didn't actually fight, but they were there as a psychological tactic against the enemies. So the point is, they were still around in Avshalom's times, and therefore Yoav realized that with such people in the army, David is much more likely to win, and therefore he should better back the winning side, which is David. Whereas by the time it came to Adon Yahu, Yoav was figuring that Adon Yahu has a real shot at it. So, by the way, we talked about when we learned this previously in the Masechta about these 400 men. We learned it before on Daf Chaf Aleph. I mentioned over there an interesting word from a Reuven Margolius, that maybe the word is not 400, but rather the word should be Tisha, which is 9, where Tof would be an abbreviation for Tisha, because there's psukim in Sefer Shmuel and Divrei Yomim that mention nine children of David, besides for the well-known ones such as Shlomo, and then the vote would be, in other words, that these were these nine that we're referring to over here. So the Gemara points out, Upliga did up Abba Bakahana. Now this that we just said, that David's victories in his wars were because of these, were because of these 400 or 9, whatever, Bnei Yefos Toyar, that disagrees with Rav Abba Bar Kahana. Because Rav Abba Bar Kahana has a different understanding of what helped David win his wars. If it weren't for David sitting and learning Torah, Yoav wouldn't have been able to be successful in his wars. So his source helped Yoav. The Omole Yoav, like also David Batorah, and Yoav, if it weren't for him fighting battles, then David would not be able to sit and learn Torah peacefully. So in other words, there was an interdependent relationship over here. David's source helped Yoav, and in turn, Yoav's Maisim Tovim, by fighting David's battles, helped David to have the safety and security to be able to learn Torah. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayhi David Oysam Mishpat Tzedakah L'chol Amo. The Pasuk says David was doing righteous justice and righteousness for all his people. The Yoav ben Tsruya Alat Sava, and Yoav ben Tsruya was in charge of the army. So Ma Tam David also Mishpat Tzedakah L'chol Amo. What made it possible for David to do Mishpat Tzedakah for all of his people? Mishum the Yoav Alat Sava is because Yoav is in charge of the army, and therefore David has the freedom to be able to do Mishpat Tzedakah. Now that we just said before, learning Torah, Marsha points out, these two things go together. He wouldn't be able to do Mishpat Tzedakah if he wasn't learning Torah constantly and reviewing the dinim. The Umatayim Yoav Alatzava, and how is it that Yoav is over the army and is able to be successful in his battles? Mishum the David Oisa Mishpat Tzedakah L'Halamoy, because of the schus of David's learning Torah and is judging the people fairly. So according to that, then it wasn't these Balei Agrupin who are making the difference as far as David being successful. It's rather the source of David's Torah. An interesting point, actually. When it comes to the korban ha'etzim, the offering of wood that they would bring to the Beis Hamikdash several times a year. There were different families that would bring on certain defined days during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. There's a couple of families mentioned where the Gemara identifies, the Gemara has machloikas, whether the two of these families, one on the 20th of Av, one on the 20th of Elul, whether they were descended from David or from Yoav. There's a couple of sichas and chevek tes and in Tovshin Mem Zayin, and other times where the Rebbe Shteltzich on that,
and explained it's not a machlokes the mitzius. What happened was, obviously, the families of David and Yoav intermarried with one another to begin with. After all, they were uncle and nephew, so their families were intertwined and intermarried. So the question is, and the point is, we're saying over here, David represents Torah, Yoav represents Gmilas Chasadim. The Gemara is also going to point out soon that Yoav was a great Baal Chesed. So therefore, so it's true, so another, or rather putting it differently, Yoav's job is avodas habirurim. David's job is learning Torah, Yoav's job is avodas habirurim, to refine our world and make it a place for Kedusha. And the Gemara is pointing out over here that these two things are interdependent. David's Torah depends on Yoav's avodas habirurim, and Yoav's avodas habirurim is enabled through David learning Torah. Okay. So that's the story of Yoav. So now we'll get back to Yoav in a little bit, but first let's talk about Avner. We said that Avner was killed by Yoav. What did he do that made him deserving to be killed like that? So you have like this. How did Yoav actually kill Avner? The pasuk is Vayetze Yoav meim David. Yoav left David. You have in the previous psukim, he's telling David, I don't think that Avner is coming to you with honest intentions. He's still on Ishbosheth's side. He's just coming as a spy. So the pasuk says, "Vayetze Yoav meim David." Yoav left David's presence. "Vayishlach malachim achrei Avner." He sent messengers to go and call Avner. "Vayashivu oisim mibur hasira," and they brought him back from Bur Hasira, and they brought him back to Hebron, and that's where Yoav killed him. So the Gemara says, "My Bur Hasira." Now, in the simple sense, you'd say Bur Hasira is the name of a place. But then, why is it important for us to know that Avner was there? So the answer is, "Omer of Abba Bakahana Bur Vesira Gormulel Avner Shiyahoreg." A bur, which means a pit of water, and a sira, a thorn, are the things that caused Avner to be killed by Yoav. What happened? Back in Shmuel Aleph, during the time when David is running away from Shaul, there's one time when Shaul is in a cave, and David is further back in the cave, and he actually has an opportunity then to kill Shaul unawares, but instead he cuts off a corner of Shaul's clothing. And afterwards, when Shaul leaves the cave, then David calls out to him, and he says, listen, you have people all the time who are convincing you that I'm a danger to you, and I'm looking to kill you, but you see how close I was to you. Here, I have this piece of cloth from your garment, and you can see how close I was, and I didn't kill you, so please leave me alone. So what happens? Avner comes in, and then so Avner says to Shaul, oh, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It means that you ripped your clothing on some thorns in the cave over there, and then David found that piece of cloth, and he's claiming that he was within striking range of you. So that's the sira, that's the thorn. Then you have a couple of prokim later, also in Shmuel Aleph, again, during the time when David is still on the run from Shaul. At one point, Shaul has his whole army, with him. It's at nighttime, they're asleep. David and his men sneak into the camp. Again, David's men are telling him, you have an opportunity now to kill Shaul. David says, absolutely not. But he takes the jug of water and the spear that Shaul had by his head. And this way, again, then he calls out and he tells them, listen, again, you know, you see how close I was. I have your water jug and I have your spear. Look how easily I could have killed you, but you see I didn't. I'm not trying to kill you. Please stop chasing after me. Again, Avner says, who says that David actually took it from near your head? He found it someplace. A pit of water represents over here, that represents it's a jug of water. So he's saying, in other words, he's claiming that he took it from near your head. He was nowhere nearby. So again, both times Avner is talking Shaul and just saying, don't think that David is such a tzaddik as he's making himself out to be. He's pretending that he found that he was able to get so close to you. Maushah says, calling a jug of water a burr is a little bit of a doichet. Rather, it would be that Avner is claiming you left it by a pit when you were going to fill up water in the jug, and then you left it there by mistake, and David found it. So now, as a result of that, prevented David and Shaul from reconciling, is now why the Edishtah brought him this punishment that he was killed. So those two things, Gormel and Avner, Shiyahore, those two things caused Avner to be killed by Yoav. So how did Yoav kill him? The pasuk says, Vayatehu Yoav Altecha Shar, Yoav brought him into the gate, Ladaber Ite Basheli, to talk with him Basheli. Now in the simple meaning, Basheli means unawares. Avner was unaware that Yoav was trying to kill him. But that means, first of all, what is Shar? Amar Rabbi Yochanan,
Shadone Din Sanhedrin. The gate we always find throughout Tanakh is the place where the Sanhedrin would sit. So it means that Yoav is bringing Avner to Beis Din actually to have him judged for killing Asoel. Omale, namely Yoav, starts the accusation by saying, "My time of Katalte Asoel, why did you kill my brother Asoel? And I should be the girl Adam for that." Omale, so he answers, "I saw a roider for you." So he says, like we said before, "I saw it was a roider who was chasing after me to kill me." So Yoav says, "You should have saved him by wounding him in one of his limbs." And Avner says, "Lo yachilile, I couldn't. The situation didn't allow it." And Yoav says, like we said before, "Hashem adoifin chamishis kavnasle, you were able to hit him exactly in the fifth rib. Be'echam evorav lo yachaltale, you weren't able to wound him in one of his evorim." So it's not stam that Yoav is just saying unilaterally, is just deciding unilaterally that Avner is guilty. He held that he actually had a valid reason in Beis Din to be able to kill him as a, to be able to kill him as a Goyel Adam, arguing that you didn't kill, that you didn't have a right to kill my brother as a Roidif, and you should have instead wounded him. Incidentally, by the way, Chevron, it mentions in Sefer Yoshua, was an Ir Miklat. So how is Yoav killing Avner there in the first place? So one thing is, when it's Shrigig Korav Lamezid, when it's very near the Amezid, then the Ir Miklat doesn't protect the Goyel Adam. So Avner either didn't know that din, or he figured he was a true Shrigig, whereas Yoav held that not, and that's why Yoav was able to take advantage of that. So the prophet says, L'dabur ite Basheli, it says that Yoav brought Avner over there to speak with him Basheli. So again, the simple meaning of Basheli means unaware, means that Avner was unaware that Yoav was trying to kill him, or unaware that the Ir Miklat wouldn't save him. But the Gemara darshins, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, al iske sholu. It means that he was talking with him about matters involving taking off a shoe. Sholu miloshet shalmeh olecha ma'araglecha, take off your shoes. Namely, that he asked him, the Gemara elsewhere mentions, that Yoav pretends to ask Avner a shaila in halacha. If a woman has to do yibum, has to do chalitza rather, or yivama has to do chalitza, and she doesn't have hands, her hands have been amputated, how can she do chalitza? So Avner says she can do it with her teeth. She can undo the straps with her teeth. So Yoav says, "Show me." And when Avner bent down to show him how it would be done, then Yoav killed him. The pasuk says, "Vayakeu shama lachoymesh." He hit him at the choymesh. So why the choymesh? Again, like we said before, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the doifin chamishis means the fifth rib, makom shemarav covered tluyin bay, in the place where the gallbladder and the liver hang. So it's a very sensitive area. Going back now to when Shlomo gave instructions to Benayahu to kill Yoav. So again, we said Yoav had run away and was holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach, and he says, "I don't want to come out of here," and Benayahu has to go to consult with Shlomo to see about what to do, and Shlomo says, "Yes, go ahead and kill him," and he says, and Shlomo gives a whole speech over there over a couple of psukim, and he says, "V'heishiv Hashem es domay al roshei." Hashem will return, will bring back the guilt of the blood on his own head, meaning he'll be responsible for his own death because what he did wrong. Asher poga b'shnei anoshim tzaddikim v'toyv mimenu, because he killed two people who were greater tzaddikim and who were better than him. So the two people are Amasa and Avner. Why is Shlomo calling them tzaddikim v'toyv mimenu? Toivim, they were better than him in the sense, show you Darshan Ach and Radakin, because as you said before, that they were Darshaning, where it says Ach and Rak in the Torah, that we know you don't listen to the king, where it would involve being over on Dibre Torah, Vuhulay Darash, whereas Yoav didn't know that Darasha. So we find, by Amasa, we said before, the soldiers were learning Torah, and he didn't want to interrupt them. By Avner, we find, we mentioned this earlier in the Masechta, when Shaul gives instructions to kill the Kohenim of Noiv, Avner refuses for the same reason. He knows that when the king is giving an order that's illegal, Al Pi Torah, then you don't listen to him. So therefore, so Avner did right in that by not to, so Avner and Amasa both showed themselves to be, both acted correctly over there, disobeying an illegal order from the king. On the other hand, Yoav did not. When David gives instructions to Yoav to see to it that Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, or former husband, whatever, is placed in a vulnerable position in the battle in order that he'll be killed, and then David will be free to marry Bathsheba, Yoav should have disobeyed the instruction. That's Uriah is not Chayiv Misa.
And yet Joab did not, and he followed David's instructions. So therefore, so we see that they were tovim in that they darshan this din and knew what to do, and Joab did not. Why are they called tzaddikim? Why are they called greater tzaddikim than him? Shehein bepev v'lo osu, because they only heard the king verbally saying it, and they still didn't do it. They heard it, actually. They heard the king telling them in face to face, do this, and they still disobeyed. For who be igeres va'osa? Yet Yoav, he wasn't told face to face by David to do this to Uriah. He received a letter from David. It would have been so easy for him to say, it's only a letter, why should I listen to it, especially since it's against Torah? And he didn't, and followed David's instructions, so therefore, relative to him, they are tovim and they are tzaddikim. Okay, another detail. So we discussed just now how Yoav tricked Avner and killed him. What about Amasa? How did he do that? The pasuk says, "V'Amasa lo nishma b'cherev asher b'yad Yoav." When Yoav and Amasa met up during the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, and Yoav killed Amasa, the pasuk says that Amasa was not careful regarding the sword that Yoav had in his hand. Omarav shalei choshtoi. What it means is not that he didn't see the sword or something. He saw it. He didn't suspect that Yoav would have any intention to kill him. And the point was, he figured that there was shalom between them. He figured that they were all at peace. Yes, previously we were on opposite sides because you, Yoav, were David's general and I was Avshalom's general, but that's all past us now. So Amasa had no reason to think that Yoav has it out for him, and therefore even though he sees Yoav with a sword on his waist, he didn't suspect anything. Okay. Now, after we talked about all these, we had quite a bit of negative things about Yoav over here, let's talk about something positive about him. The pasuk says after he was executed, Vayikover Beveise Bamidbar. It says he was buried in his house in the desert. Now, one point that means is, in other words, that he did actually get his wishes that if he was executed by Beis Din, as we learned before, then he should have been buried in the kvarim that they have, the temporary kvarim that they have for the Niskol and the Nisruf and so forth, as we learned earlier in the Perek. So here we see that he actually got his way, and he was buried together with his ancestors. But why did the pasuk say that he was buried in his house in the Midbar? Otu Beisid Midbar, who? Is Yoav's house a desert? Bechlal, but as a general, he would be living in Yerushalayim. But in any case, he's certainly not living in the desert. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kam Midbar, means that Yoav's house was like a desert. Ma midbar mufka lakol, just like a desert is hefker for everyone. Af beis yeshol Yoav mufka lakol, the same way Yoav's house is hefker for everybody. Any aniyim can come, and they're always going to find food and lodging and everything in Yoav's house. The poor people can always come and get parnasa from his house. So he was a big bal tzedakah. Dabaracha, another meaning. Tamidbar, there's another way in which Yoav's house is like a midbar. Ma midbar menuka migezel v'arayas, just like a desert is free of gezel and arayas, because those kinds of things you only find in big cities. You don't really have, there's not enough people in a midbar for there to be such averus. The same way Yoav's house was free of such things as well. The chiddush being, in other words, that Maharsha points out that usually soldiers are not like that. Soldiers, and Yoav was a general for most of his career, so usually they are guilty of gezel and they are guilty of arayas. So, Yoav's house was clean of that. Ben Yehoyada adds, even though Yoav most of the time wasn't home, nevertheless, he still kept a tight ship over there at home and made sure there's no gezel on our eyes. Okay, another drasha in favor of Yoav. The pasuk describes how after they conquered the city of Yerushalayim, so it says that David was rebuilding part of the city, and then it says the Yoav Yechaya Shorayir. Yoav was Yechaya the rest of the city. Now, in the simple meaning, Yechaya means that he was reviving. Yechaya means reviving. So, in the simple sense, it means he was rebuilding the rest of the city. But the Gemara Darshins, Omer of Yehuda, Afilu Munini V'Tzachanosa. Even fish and brine for the fish, which are like the kind of fancy foods, the kind of finicky foods that people would eat. Torim poris lahu. So even whenever Yoav was tasting any of these things, he would send some portions of it to the people of the city. So Yechaya, he was enlivening them by giving them even these delicacies that he himself would eat, small fish and the juice with them, which are delicacies. He would make sure that he didn't just keep it for himself, he would make sure that the aniyim of the city get some as well. Marsha points out, since it says sha'or ha'ir, the word sha'or suggests even the things that are toffel, even the things that are shirayim, he would still make sure that the aniyim of the city were given some of it. So therefore, so that's another point in praise of Yoav, that he was a big baal tzedakah and a big baal chesed. Hadron aloch nigmar adin. Mishnah says, Arba misses nimsiru lebeistin. Altogether, there are four types of misses that are given to beistin. Skila sreifa heading v'chenek. Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon says you have to flip around the order. Sreifa, skila, chenek, v'hereg. Reb Shimon puts sreifa ahead of skila and chenek ahead of hereg. The nakamina of it is, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, if a person is chai of two types of misses beistin, which one do we give him? So we give him the harsher one. So the question is, which one is the harsher one? So Reb Shimon holds that sreifa is harsher than skila and chenek more than hereg, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow why that is, Bez Hashem. So the Mishnah continues, Zu mitzvah saniskolin. This that we learned in the previous parak is a mitzvah of how people are given skila. The other three mitzvahs based in we're going to discuss in this parak. So the Gemara starts off, Omar Rava, Omar Rav Schoira, Omar Rav Huna, Kol Mokam Sheshanu Chachamim Derech Minyan. Whenever the Chachamim give a number of something in a Mishnah, and they say there are this number of things, and here's the list. Ein mukdam u'ocher. They're not necessarily meant to be in any particular order. We're not always putting out. Now, obviously, you have the shnayas that are listing the order in which things are done. You have, for example, let's say the order of brachas in Shemana Esrei, the order of tkiyas, things like that. But here what we're saying is that when the Mishnah just gives us a list, it's not necessarily meant to be in any significant order. So, chutz mishiva sammonin, with the exception of the seven chemicals. We learn in a Mishnah. Now, if you have, so like this, you have a piece of clothing that has a stain on it. You need to know whether that stain is blood, in which case it might be damnida. So you have, this was a piece of clothing, let's say, that a woman wore. You don't know whether the stain on it is blood, which would mean that she's a nida, or whether it's some other kind of, or whether it's a dye or something. So the Mishnah says, shiva sammonin ma'virin ala kesem. So they would use seven chemicals, seven reagents to put on the stain to see if it makes the stain go away. The first one is roik tofel, is the empty saliva. The Gemara in Nidda explains all the details. Roik tofel means basically the saliva when a person first wakes up in the morning before they've spoken or anything, then that saliva is especially strong. Tofel actually means tasteless, so a tasteless saliva. Umei grisim. The second one is the juice or the soup from split beans. Umei raglayim, urine. Each of these things, again, in Nida it goes into more detail. Here we're just listing them briefly. The neser, the fourth one is neser, which is it's a chemical. It's a mineral. That's a mineral that contains sodium. They find that it's mined in Egypt and in other places. The next one is a bodis, is a certain kind of herb. Kamulia is another kind of herb. The eshlach or the eshlag and something that you get from oyster shells. So all of those things, so you have to do one after the other for katani sefer. So now this Mishnah continues, hevir and shalei kesidron, that if you put them on the stain out of order, oyshe hevir and shvat and ke'echad, or you put them all seven at once, like also v'lo klum, then it doesn't count for anything, and even if the stain stays, it doesn't show that it's dye, it might well be blood, but in order for it to be blood, it would have to be that you put these reagents on it in this order, and only then if it goes away does it mean that's blood. So therefore, so we see that even though the Mishnah is giving a list over there and not specifically saying this is the order, nevertheless, that is the order. Now Rashi had said, again, the question is, we want to use that to see whether in fact it is blood or not, and if not, then we know it's dye. Tosfos points out that even really if we know that, even if we know that damnida, if it lasts through all of these seven reagents, then we would still say that it's bottle. So therefore, it still wouldn't be matame, the clothing. In any case, the point is that there we have an example where even though the Mishnah just gives a list, it's actually meant to be a list in order.
So Gemara says, "Rav Papa Sava Om Mishmei the Rav Om Af Arba Misses." Here is another one, the four misses of our Mishnah. Midikam Maflik Rav Shimon. Since we see that Rav Shimon is arguing and saying the order is different, so Shmamina Dafka Katani. Obviously, that means that the Tana of our Mishnah, the Tana Kama, is saying them in a specific order. When he's listing them, he's not Sam listing them in a random order. He holds that Skila goes ahead of Sreifa and Herod goes ahead of Chenek, and Rav Shimon is disagreeing. So the Gemara says, "V'idach." So why doesn't Rava, in the name of Rav Schora, in the name of Rav Huna, add that to his list as well? He says, "The plug to Lekamai would be fine, because we're not talking about cases where there's machloikas in the Mishnah. It's true, there can be more than one case, but a case where all the Tanoim hold that a list is meant to be in order, you find that only by the Shiva Sammoni." The Gemara continues, "Rav Papa Omar, Af Seder Yuma." Rav Papa says, here's another one, the order of the Avodas in Masechta Yuma, where it talks about there, the order of the Avodas on Yom Kippur, Ditznan, and we learn in a mission over there, Kol Maisi Yom HaKippurim HaMurim Al HaSeder. All of these details of the Avodah of Yom Kippur that are given in order over there, Im Hiktim Maisa L'Chaver, if he did one thing before the other, if he did them out of order, like also like Klum, then what he did doesn't count for anything because they have to be done in the exact order that it says. So the Idach, why doesn't Rava count that as well? Because it's not Huch Chumra Ba'alma, because that's not really the reason why for the Seder, not because one of them is more important than the other, but just because the Torah, because the day of Yom Kippur is so important that the Torah wants you to do things in a certain order. So in other words, not like when we said about the seven Sammonim, the reason is because each one has a greater effect than the other one, and therefore they have to be done in a certain order. And the Dalamis is based in also each one is harsher than with Maisi Yom Kippurim. It's not, for example, let's say you have, for example, he has to shecht his power. Then he goes and then takes the handfuls of turdus and so on. It's not that, let's say, taking the handful of the turdus is more or less important than shechting the par, but just that's the turdus, because Yom Kippur is such a serious thing, therefore the turdus insists on a certain order of it. So therefore, so Rava is not listing it, because the reason for the order there is based on a different kind of consideration. The Gemara continues, so the Gemara continues, Rav Huna Breda Rishoma Af Seder Tomid. Here's another one where the order is significant. Here's another one where the order is significant is that when it comes to the Seder Atomid, which is described in the Sefta Tomid, the Katani Allah, and the Mishnah says, Zeru Seder Tomid. This is the order of the Tomid. So we see that what the Mishnah is listing over there, it's not Sam, a random collection of things, they're actually done in this order. The Idach, what does Rava answer to that? He says, Ahula mitzvah ba'alma. That means the mitzvah, ideally you should do it that way, but it doesn't mean that if you did it in a different order, then you actually wouldn't be Yotze. As opposed to with the seven Sammonim, you do it out of order, then you're not Yotze. And the same way, the Seder Yom Kippurim, if you did it out of order, you're not Yotze. But here, by the Seder Talmud, it's just, this is the proper way to do it, but nevertheless, you could do it in a different order. So the Gemara says now, so what is Rava's point then? If we're going through these various cases where we have a list like that, and Rava is saying that you should know it's not meant to be an absolute order like that, so La Puki, so what is it, what is Rava coming to exclude then? So La Puki mitzvah chalitza. He comes to exclude the mitzvah of chalitza. The Tanan, we learn in Yevamos, mitzvah chalitza, the proper way of doing chalitza is... and by the way, here's where Tosfos wonders, why didn't we add also the order of the brachas on Rosh Hashanah and the order of the tekiyas? So as we were saying before, there is the one answer about that is that that yeah where you have where you where so 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 where you so 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 one answer is, in fact, where the Mishnah is explicitly saying Seder Brachas, then yeah, obviously it means in that order. But when the Mishnah doesn't say the word Seder necessarily, then nevertheless, generally there's no Seder with the exception of these things. So va'apuki mi mitzvahs chalitza. So as opposed to chalitza, the tan mitzvahs chalitza, bohu v'yavimti lifnei beistin, the proper order of chalitza is that the yavam and the yavama come to beistin, ho'yunosin la'etza ha'igenes loy, the first thing is they give him the appropriate advice to do yibum v'chalitza, Meaning sometimes we might tell them, for example, if you're significantly different in age, then don't do Yibum, just do Chalitza. So they give them the advice that's appropriate to the situation. The pasuk says that the zkenim of a city should call for him and they should speak to him. So they give him the, so they discuss with him and they advise him. Then she says that my yavam refuses to do yibum with me. He says, I don't want to take her as a wife. Over Loshan HaKodesh O'Yomim, these words, Mei and Yuvami and Lechafat Lekach, have to be said in Loshan Kodesh. The Gemara there learns it from Sukkim. The Nigshe Yuvimta Ein of La'ene Askenim, the next thing that happens is the Yuvama comes in front of him in the presence of the Askenim. The Chotza Nale, she takes off his shoe. The Yorka Bafana, but she spits towards his face, which means Roy Kanir LaDayonim. She spits in his presence on the ground. It has to be that the Dayonim see the saliva coming out of her mouth. And then she speaks up and says, this is what should be done to a man who doesn't want to build up his brother's household. And they're called in Yisrael based Chalutz HaNoal, which means that everybody says Chalutz HaNoal three times. So that's the order the Mishnah says. The Omer of Yehuda. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, mitzvah chalitza, the proper way to do the mitzvah of chalitza, kod o, she says the words, mei and yivami, v'kore, and he says, lo chafatzi, chilatzes, she takes off the shoe, v're kekes, she spits, v'kore, and she says, kocha yo'osalish. Now, in Yivamis, we ask, my kamash malon, what's Rabbi Yehuda's chiddush? Matzlinson, he's just repeating what it says in the Mishnah. And the answer is, hokamash malon, mitzvah hochi. Rabbi Yehuda wants you to know that the proper way of doing the mitzvah is like that. But if he flipped it around, if they did it in a different order, less fun bar, then there's no problem in it. Tani nami hochian, in fact, we learn in a Mishnah like that, vein shehiktim chalitza l'rekika, whether you put chalitza before the spitting, or rekika l'chalitza, or whether she spat before she did the chalitza, masha asa asui, then what's done is done. So the point is, even though the Mishnah is giving over there a list, Rava wants you to know it doesn't have to be in that order, it could be out of order. That's what Rava meant by saying that every place where the Chachamim give a list, then it's not meant to be in a specific order, with the exception of the Shiva Sammanin and various other Amiroyim mention other exceptions, but over there by chalitza, it's not so. And another one, here's another example, Ula Puki Mehoditnan. Here's another one where we have an exception where even though the Mishnah gives a list, it's not meant to be in a particular order. Kohen Gadol Meshamesh B'Shmoina Kelim, the Mishnah in Yuma says, a Kohen Gadol does the Avodah wearing eight clothing, the Hedyot Barba, a Kohen Hedyot wears four, the four for a Kohen Hedyot are B'Ksoines, B'Mechassayim, B'Mitznefes V'Avnei, the long shirt, the pants, the turban and the belt, most of all, then Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol, in addition, also has Choshen V'Ephod Me'il V'Tzitz. Now that's the order. So you would think that it sounds like he puts on the Ksonis first, because the Ksonis is listed first. But Vitanya, in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Minayin Shaloyehe Java Kodim L'Mechnasayim. How do we know that nothing else is put on before the Mechnasayim? Shenemo, Mechnasay Vad, Yiyu Abasore. The Pasuk says, Mechnasayim of linen should be on his flesh, which implies that they're the first thing that goes on his flesh, before anything else. So therefore, so we see that even though the Ksonis is listed first, in fact, they're not put on first, the Mechnasayim is. So the Tana Tan my time Achtumei Ksonis. Why does the Tana put the Ksonis first? So the reason is Mishum the Achtumei Kro. The reason is because the Pasuk mentions it first. When it mentions the Kohen getting dressed to do the Avoda, when it says by the Kohen Gadol, So it mentions the Ksonis. Ksonis bad Kodesh Yubash, or Michnasei bad Yu Abasarai. So therefore it mentions the Ksonis first. And Ukra my time after me. In turn, why does the Pasuk put it first? Mishum de Machasi, Kula Gufa Adifalei, because the Pasuk would rather mention the first thing that covers his entire body. The Michnasayim only cover him from his waist to his knees. So therefore, better let's mention the Ksonis first, which covers his whole body, and then we'll go to talk about the Michnasayim. But in fact, the Michnasayim are put on first. So there's again an example where a Mishnah gives a list, and nevertheless we do it out of order of what it says in the Mishnah.
Yes, we call it.
Good luck, everyone.